I'm Ray to slash a bird.
No quarter. I am going to be uncomfortable and all over you from start to finish.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Outside of the Box. And as you know, I've been doing these roundtables, and when I was kind of trying to come up with ideas, I wanted to do something really special and get at least as many of the giant nut winners as I could on one call to talk about, you know, winning the giant nut, how the landscape has changed over time, all of those things. So I am really excited to have Ray Billings, Donald Hudson, Jameson Goh, and then Alex Grant and Aaron Hill from Tantrum to just talk about all of this stuff. So welcome everyone to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So I kind of made myself a lot of notes because we're talking about a pretty large span of time, you know, as far as the giant nut and things like that. And the first thing that I really want to get into is just overall, and I think that I've talked to some of you about this individually, but just the way that the landscape has changed since back in the days of Comedy Central. I mean, obviously there's some very clear things that have changed with, you know, going to one weight class instead of all of the different weight classes and things like that. But I mean, so much else has changed just in terms of robot design, all of those things. And how do you think those changes have really contributed to the way, you know, certain robots do better than others today? I know we talk about it as a game of rock, paper, scissors, and of course there's that element to it, but a lot of it is in that design and skill and driving and all of that as well. So I just, you know, kind of want to hear whoever would like to chime in first.
You know, design's changing over time has basically always been the case. And I mean, you could even go back to the Comedy Central days and stuff that worked for like season one and season two. By season four and five, even way back then, that stuff was changing. And that's the nature of mechanical sports. It always changes a lot more than people think. I mean, you look at NASCAR, you're watching them, it's cars going around the, you know, 5 years later, it looks like it's the same cars. And there's thousands of changes they made between those times to stay competitive. So we're always trying to one up each other on what will work and go forward.
Yeah.
I think one of the fun references and data points I always see is like, take like a 2023 Toyota Camry and compare that to like a 1980 Porsche. Right. Like straight line, Camry probably wins.
Probably. Yeah.
I think the, you know, thinking back as far as I can go, there's a lot of things that are still pretty similar. I mean, if we take the power to weight ratio and then we pick that up and we put it off to the side, you know, really for me, the thing that seems most interesting is the phenotypes of the robot, you know, the different tactics that we all had. I think back in the Comedy Central days, it was more in its beginning and we were all looking for tricks to negate the other robots. And the funny part is I still think that happens today. Even when we go into line and we have surprises for each other, it's because we all know that no one really has usually one answer that works for all the robots. And I know that, I guess I can take it back all that way. The only robot I didn't really do it with was Tazbot. That was the first one. But after that, I realized I wasn't going to be, you know, capable of being competitive in this sport. One, you know, with the parts and the money that I had. So I was going to have to be innovative in my problem solving skills. And I still see it today. I think the robots are still, even at this point where we listen to the duo coming in, you know, and trying that, I think we're going to see a lot of people. Jameson proved it in the last BattleBots that, you know, these rules are not defined. And we're all trying to outsmart each other. And
we're not done innovating by any stretch. That just continues going forward.
Yeah.
I think it's largely also, you know, the advancement of technology, I think has kind of encouraged some designs to proliferate since then.
Sure.
Yes. I mean, when I was doing like the Comedy Central, I never did it. I was watching it. there were a lot of sort of wedges, lifters, hammers, not that many spinners. I don't really think spinners entered onto the scene, the heavy hitting ones, until maybe season three. You know, obvious example, Son of Waiachi. And then, you know, you had Mahler, McEvor, and those folks coming up.
Final Destiny. That was a good
one. Yeah, Final Destiny. Well, and then, yeah, that's a good, you know, jump back into your innovation, trying to one-up each other. You are definitely, you're celebrated for that tactic. That was brilliant. I probably watched that one like 20 times. But yeah, you didn't see that many spinners back then. And so what really changed? How did people figure out how to make kinetic energy weapons work? And I think, well, Son of Waiachi is looking at their system. They put a lot of mass into it for what they were able to achieve, the power that they could output in their motors. And then more recently, you know, with the ABC series, I feel like the availability of lithium polymer batteries and then brushless motors later, and then the controllers which supported all of that, you can put a lot more power into motors for less weight than you could back then. And suddenly kinetic weapons are extremely viable. You see a lot more of them these days.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Now, I do kind of want to dive into like each of your personal journeys with getting the giant nut, because I think that looks different for everyone. So I'll go back to Donald with Dissector. And actually, I'm kind of curious, you haven't won a giant nut with Lockjaw, but you have had a couple of really good seasons with Lockjaw. And so what I was kind of wondering is, like with Dissector, what do you feel was successful in you doing well with that robot? And then also with those two good seasons with Lockjaw in 2018 and 2020, when you went 6-3 and 6-2, like respectively, what do you think was going well for you at that time?
Well, you know, for me, it's always been kind of the same. Tazbot originally wanted a better grand game. And then when Dissector was made, during that process of designing it, which most people don't really know, but that robot was originally called Rukno. And the first drawings were done in Rhino. And the whole concept of that was to gain control. The ground control game is still going on. And what I did is I put the biggest jaws I could come up with, modeled after a tree grappler so that they could overbite. And I had just realized that me being able to put the 340 pounds on the tips and drive in any way, shape, or form was going to add control to the game. Even if I didn't have the scariest or biggest robot, that would be a deal changer. And then being able to do it inverted, as well as put the pressure on it when I want it. Now, what's interesting, going back to Jameson's point about weapon power, the weapons weren't as powerful. And you know, today's weapons could just rip that 70-pound set of chromoly jaws right off, you know, in one hit. But if I take that robot and then, you know, we won't even go through the many different variations that most of you guys know I've built since then. They've all kind of the same thing, because I think when we, as an engineer, invent an idea, we kind of stick with it. We either finish it before we put it to rest. If it's doing great, we keep it. And if we think that we like a better idea, then we want to innovate a better one. But it takes moxie to go back at it again with a new design. And the further you get in time doing this, the harder it is to do, because you don't want to reinvent a robot that has been created since then. And that is my dilemma. I stuck with the jaw theme and the articulation of the jaws in the first version of Lockjaw, but they just weren't holding up to being able to fly through the air, be flipped, be hit by Ray or, you know, anybody else with a weapon. And so I had to innovate and go a direction that carried both the jaws and the kinetic weapon. But I stayed true to my concept of being invertible. As costly as it is, I love that part. And I think what I would be saying to all the viewers out there that watch this and hear, see all these guys build these robots, they love that they built it a certain way, and it's difficult that no one else can build it without it looking like theirs. Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right? That is the highest honor, is that we innovate a design, we put it on TV, and it has some kind of showing, and everybody likes it. Win or lose, I think that's for me what keeps me doing it. So that's my short answer.
I even got a name for it, and that they call mine tomb clones when you get all the ones where they look like mine.
That's good.
Clones.
I don't want to talk about that part.
It's all right. It only hurts you when you have Happy Meals.
Well, I mean, like, I guess my most direct analogy, you know, we Zach and I have agreed to just say we're different, and that's it. Because yeah. We have, I mean, Scorpios and Sawblaze exist on the same show at the same time. And then for the longest period of time, like, people would just confuse the two, even though they changed the color scheme. They changed their green blue to be more blue, and we stuck with our green and black, and people still confuse the two.
That's just because common audience doesn't, you know, has trouble telling if one has a saw blade or a gas engine, right? Or you know, anything. So, but I think your guys' robots are totally different.
I would agree.
Yeah. Different machines. Yeah. I also completely agree with that. That's also an interesting thing. Now, Ray, for you, Tombstone in some iteration or another has been around, I think, a lot longer than like a lot of fans realize. You know, they just started watching in the ABC days or whatever, and they're like, oh, this is a new robot. I mean, it's a new robot, but it really isn't.
2004, I think, was the first build for it. So it started out as super heavyweight. It's a big, big, heavy boy.
Yes. And I think that, you know, of course, what most people remember is those early seasons in the ABC days and the first season of BattleBots in the Discovery days, especially the 6-0 season in 2016, winning it all. I mean, where Tombstone was so dominant and had such knockout power that, I mean, just nobody could beat you, except for Bite Force.
Okay, so I came so close in 2015. You know, I got all the way to the finals and then lost in the finals. And when I came back for 26, I was a man possessed. I was focused in ways I probably haven't been since. And because I was like, we have to get back there. We have to do that. Because I spent a whole year, you know, kicking myself in the ass because I got so close and then fell short. So it was we as a team, we were really focused at that point in time, and it was every bit as satisfying as it seemed when we finally got there.
Ray, you should be so proud, actually, because you're the only robot that has stayed the same the entire time, and you've been in every weight class, right?
Yeah,
and every weight class the same form factor.
I mean, things move around and change and whatnot inside, but the visuals of the layout of it has stayed pretty much the same since Shin Splitter, which I think was 2002. Keep minor changes in iterations, you know?
I mean, that's why I think Tombstone came in and just cleaned house, right?
It was a very refined robot at that point in time. I mean, it's hard to say that because it's rather simple, but it was a fairly refined.
No, it's the detail work though. Like the tomb clones don't go and win events, but
yes,
Tombstone still wins events. Like, you know, Mortician still wins events, and so yeah.
Tombstone's the only one by name at least that has, because I won a BattleBots championship as a super heavyweight and as a heavyweight, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah. That is very cool. Since then, I'm just curious because I don't know that I even asked you this question, but, you know, in 2018, it obviously had to be hard because I would say Tombstone was probably considered the favorite by far. And then in the end, you know, Bombshell kind of surprises everyone that season.
Yeah. We wouldn't have gone the distance on that season. Because we came in as the champion from before, our you know, pre-fights before getting into the tournament were just the toughest they could be, and we were limping by the time we got there. The back-to-backs from the Minotaur fight was a great fight. It's a fight for the ages. We never recovered from that fight, and so the fact that we got as far as we did was, you know, I can't feel bad about how that tournament went. I mean, if we'd have made it past Bombshell, I think we'd have got Lockjaw next, if I remember right. And he'd have mopped the floor with us. If we'd have made it past Bombshell, I have no doubt he'd have beat us. We were just too beat up at that point in time.
Yeah,
it's a game of longevity. You gotta still be running to get anywhere.
Yeah, you gotta back together to beat up our first tantrums. So like,
yeah.
Yeah, and that's a really good perfect segue, because you know, I think Tantrum certainly has had an interesting journey. I mean, you know, in the beginning, I think Tantrum was most known for that fight with Tombstone because of the fist.
That was crazy cool. Yeah,
I fisted the arena.
I feel like, you know, it just has come such a long way since then. You know, two seasons, you know, pretty good, a couple of losses, but not, you know, not that many defining wins. And then to come in 2021 and just do what that robot was able to do. I mean, I wasn't surprised, but I think it did surprise a lot of people.
We were.
Yeah. You know, so kind of talking about that and like how last season was obviously not, you know, it was a little bit more disappointing.
Well, so on that note, it's like, it's interesting to see people's reactions, like, oh, you had a bad season 7 or World Championship 7. And it's like, look, I've lived through season 3 and 4 with Tantrum. I think I'll be okay. it was a rough start, right? Like, and like, yeah, you have good season, you have bad season, and you just pick yourself up and figure out what you're gonna do next and just kind of take it one step at a time. Like, go through the next steps, like figure out what was the core reason that didn't go well, and it's like, you know, figure those out and solve those issues, right? And like the glow up in season 5 from season 4 was us realizing we didn't build a solid drivetrain. Like we had to go back to the fundamentals to realize why we weren't doing well and make those changes. And then we saw a night and day difference in the like arena effectiveness, if you will. So
I think one of the things I'd like to say too, and I told you this, Alex, when we had lunch that one time, you know, we opened up talking about the evolution of the sport and how it was kind of growing in different directions. And, you know, it started back in the day with wedges, and then, you know, it got more advanced, got more destructive. And then, but what I notice now that's doing very well is robots that come with armor first and are able to deploy their weapon. And I just want to give you, both you and Jameson, credit for that, because that's the harder part for, I think, the engineers to do, is to realize they can't just do one thing sometimes. They have to have both problems solved, not only a good drivetrain, but they got to be able to put up some kind of defense. And I certainly have not been good at that, but I liked the whole idea of deploying and, you know, shields and swords. I just, you know, I would say I haven't done it good enough, but I remember when I seen the first Tantrum, I was like,
and I think everybody like should give me credit for that. I'm the one that made everybody put armor on. Okay.
Well, yes, you're right. You're the flame to okay. The boss.
All right, that's absolutely. All on me. I'm the one that changed that landscape.
You say that, Ray, but the first Tantrum when we went and fought you in season 3
held up really well.
It held up really well, and we realized Ray doesn't hit hard enough.
So okay, fair enough.
We went from half inch thick down to 3/8 next year.
Fair enough.
I'm kidding. You hit plenty good.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because if I was trying to actually do something to the armor, I'd have used a sharper weapon. Yeah. I had the big wide teeth because I was yanking one of those fists off. That's the only reason.
You gave us the honor of, I remember you walking outside to put batteries in Tombstone and then walked outside, stared at our robot, which was next. We shared battery table. Okay. And then you went, And then you rolled back inside, took off the S7 bar and put on the giant bar because you were worried the S7 bar would crack on the steel box. That's true.
Yeah, but
I'm like, all right, we're not winning.
My biggest thought was, I got to make sure I get those fists off there. So,
yeah. Yeah, it was a great fight. It's funny to think too that like you think of your history and like your career in BattleBots, and like would we have been invited back if that moment didn't happen? Was like Tantrum still
it's hard to say. There's so many things that are outside of our control about where you get placed in the tournament and how you even get invited and whatnot. I mean, it's I mean I'm glad it worked out the way it did, and we were part of a classic moment that can't be replaced. I mean, that part's kind of cool.
Leave the world better than you found it, even if it means putting the fist in the arena.
Well, it's so funny because they left the fist in that conduit for the finals, because the finals was right after that match, and they were afraid that if they pulled it out, it might cut the wires to the lights. And the whole time the final was running, I was sitting in the corner going, yeah, I was just hoping that they'd shake something and we'd get this big plasma ball in the corner and the building would go dark. That's the only thing that could have made that better. So if we could have just killed that.
You wanted the fist to explode and spark.
I think those were.
You've been saying sorry about your floor for a while to other people. Sorry about your box.
If we'd got just a in the corner and then it turned the lights out, that would have just. You couldn't replace that ever. That would have been the best.
I'm surprised they didn't take it out sooner then. Because imagine if that did actually happen, and then the finals, after all the damage has been done, suddenly the lights just go dark.
Humanity has made it real far from like, oh, the arrow's in, don't pull it out, they'll bleed to death. It's like, same logic. Fist is in the wall, leave it. Yeah, we're alive, leave it.
They didn't want to pull it out until they powered the box down and whatnot. So
secure it in there more. Make sure it doesn't come out during the fight.
It'll just be a permanent part of the arena.
Yeah. It wasn't that hard to pull out.
No, really, because it was plastic. You just pull it out. It wasn't that big a deal. But
yeah, it's like a badge. They should have left it. Even if it's not real, they should put it back.
I agree. I was hoping that they would leave it in there permanently. And just like
3D print one out of plastic and just glue it on there. You know, just leave it up there all the time.
Maybe we'll do that for next season. We'll just, while we're in there loading in, just plop it over in there. See how many fights we can make it before that anybody notices.
If somebody says anything, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure now they will now look at and see you guys doing that going, and they'll be like, oh, no, we're not shooting kinetic missiles into the wall, you know, even though we kind of plan it all the time, but, you know.
Maybe.
too funny. Now, Jameson. So again, like I said, everybody's had such, I think, an interesting journey, and, you know, Sawblaze did come on the scene in 2016, but I mean, that was back when there just weren't as many matches that, you know, would get shown on TV. So there wasn't really a lot that happened that season, but I think for a long while, it was kind of this story of Sawblaze would have a pretty good season, you know, just have a couple of losses. And really, when you look at the teams that you lost to, it's always very good robots, and it just, something happened and it didn't go your way. And so I think to have all of those seasons kind of along those similar lines, and then this past season in World Championship 7 to kind of have a breakout like that, I mean, kind of talk about just like, again, your journey with how that went for you.
Yeah, just like listening to everyone's discussion points. I mean, similar to the Tantrum story, you know, we started in 2016, as you said, and, you know, that season was all about just getting on the show. So we kind of like pulled out all the bells and whistles. We're like, oh, we're going to do a saw robot. It's going to go overhead. No one's done that before, right? Of course, Scorpios came out the same season, which was part of that fun confusion. We put a flamethrower on it. Let's make the flamethrower green and all those things. It was a bit much, you know, but you have to try definitely to get on the show. And so we had a lot of, I don't want to call them gimmicks because they do very much work, but they're definitely extra showy bits. And, you know, the robot was pretty good. It was good in this, in one fundamental area, and that was drivetrain. That's been iterated before, and it's been mentioned. However, the thing, you know, we didn't have that many fights. We didn't have any film. We got a highlight reel. That our fight was the first one of the season versus Razorback. And that one, after that one, I was very upset. That was set a precedent for the entire season in terms of how judging would be considered. And, you know, even though we had we had dominated the fight. We lost because of passive aggression, passive weapon usage. We didn't use our weapon that much because we didn't feel that we needed to. And I kind of worried in the back of my mind, would we be accepted back? And so, you know, that was a big question. We had a good rumble, the MIT rumble, where we got to show off a little of the sparks. The weapon system wasn't there yet, so we barely got it turning at the end. But I think we left enough of an impression that, hey, the robot doesn't work all the time, but it can drive around, it's fast, and it can get beaten on. So by the time where it came around to 2018, you know, I think we got the call. You know, Greg's like, can you be ready? And like, the robot's already ready. It barely fought in 2016. So we basically, I don't know if that's the reason, but we were quick turn. And so we got an in. I think that was the chance to solidify some of those details and really show what Sawblaze could do. I think we, you know, entered into that season against Overhaul, threw a lot of sparks. And I think that largely that drivetrain carried it through. You know, I saw the Diamond Blade. Diamond Blade is very situational, but it wasn't doing that damage that you really needed to. I think it was so much more a control bot and it did pretty fire things and pretty spark things. It was all in the drivetrain. That 2019 season, though, you know, folks who follow the small weight classes know that Megatron exists, and the concept of the hammer saw has been exercised in Megatron for a few years prior to that. And so when it was time, proposed the idea to Greg, I'm going to do this. He's like, sure, sounds great. And finally got around to doing it. Somewhat rushed and somewhat imperfect, but just that idea of this sort of deployable flywheel, charging up a flywheel and then bringing it overhead. And it had this certain, like a hammer flail or a flare where stuff moves around, a short shower of sparks and the potential for good damage. I think that's what people really liked. And you just started refining that over and over and over again. What we thought we needed from the small robot and what the big robot actually needed, you play around a little bit with the weights, the speed, the delivery mechanism. And, you know, with that, with those iterations, it got better and better every single time. You know, you learn from your competitors, you learn from your experience. Getting whooped by Tantrum told us a lot as well. You know, we knew that drivetrain was important. That's the legs that carried us all that way. We realized ours was too heavy and it needed to be more agile. So yeah, you just make all those small changes. That's all about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it worked.
Like season seven Sawblaze has motors that are 10 more than what Tantrum and Blip
have. Right. 10 millimeters longer. It's got to be that much longer.
Sometimes it's those little things. Now, I do want to just briefly, because, you know, for me, that's they're interesting stories, briefly kind of touch on Bite Force at Endgame, who, you know, couldn't be here on this podcast, but just kind of getting some thoughts, because I think that they've, you know, both had some interesting journeys as well. In fact, I've heard a lot of fans refer to Endgame as Bite Force 2.0, which I don't necessarily think that's the case, but, you know, with Endgame, people don't remember the first two seasons that Endgame was in. They were, I would say, fairly mediocre compared to the seasons where they went 7-1. So it just was a switch, you know, the flip of a switch, basically, and had two just very dominant seasons. And in 2021, I mean, the only loss was to Minotaur. And I think, you know, Minotaur just is a robot that happens to have their number and possibly were the only ones that could have taken them out that season. You know,
wait,
so...
Was that the year I got stuck on the floor? That was the first, because I was pitted next to them their first year, I thought.
The Minotaur fight, or?
No, when I fought them, when Lockjaw. That's when I fought them their first
one. Yeah, it was the first year. Yeah.
It was the first year, and it was their first or second fight, and I still remember it vividly. I was like a half inch from their ass, and I got stuck in the floor, and that's it. And the jaws killed me, and I was like, son of a bitch. And you know how happy I was to see it happen to them later? I was cheering. I was like, kick that, you bastards.
Yeah. All you people with your silly forks.
Yeah. Well, we all got them now. I don't know, man.
I mean, that's like one of those things. Like, you see, I don't know, who was it that was first to get stuck in the kill saw slot? And like, so what I was doing when I saw that, I was just like, all right, whatever he's doing, don't do that. Figure out how that happened and don't do that.
Yeah.
I'd be okay if they put kill saw slots all over the floor. Just get you catch all you got.
I'm sure you would, Ray. I'm sure you would.
Didn't you one time hit a kill saw slot cover? You know,
they came up.
Nut got stuck in the kill saw slot once, right?
The nut got stuck right in the they widened them just a little bit for those sparkers that they've got now. So it used to be that, because that nut's pretty big on the bottom, it just slides right over it. Well, now it drops down in there, and it was just the actual right size to grab it. Yeah.
Don't you guys think it's interesting that both Captain Shredderator and Megabyte has done their last couple fights with wedges? You guys watching that though?
I'm interested to watch that.
You guys are paying attention. I know you are.
Yeah.
You guys, there's an evolutionary change the minute the things we think aren't going to work. You know.
I'm looking to see if it works, because you know.
Yeah.
That's like it's the counter to the counter, right? Yes, and so we need a counter after that.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah, I mean.
Ray doesn't. He doesn't need anything.
No,
I don't exactly see the same forks or anything. No, I just need to keep it from setting on fire. If I do that, I'll be good.
Yeah. because I know that fans are going to want me to ask this question, because so many people ask this again and again, and I really want to put the debate to rest that there are, you know, there's a huge debate over if Bite Force was in the field today, would it be as effective as it was back when it won the Giant Nut? And I'm just curious to actually officially get everybody's opinion on that.
Anytime Paul shows up at an event, he's going to be a major player because he's really good at what he does.
If he decided he wanted
to come back, he would watch film, he would take an idea, he would make some updates, and you couldn't count him out. Is he going to walk in and just march to the finals? I don't know. But I mean, you couldn't ignore him because he's been out of the game for a few years. He'd be right there.
That's saying direct verbatim quote from Paul to me at one point was like, yeah, the advice is just go back earlier where people weren't trying as hard as you are now. So it's like, yep.
Well, and actually, I'd like to take a poll. Jameson, were you in First Robotics?
Yes, I was.
How about you guys? Aaron? Alex,
yep.
Right?
15 years.
I did find out about the four first, though.
Right, and how many of you knew of the Cheesy Poofs?
Yes.
Okay, so for the other BattleBots competitors out there that weren't in first, because I don't... Ray, I think you helped the team, right?
I get asked for, hey, we got this problem, can you help us? But I've never actually gone to any of the events.
So during the hiatus between Comedy Central days and the latest reboot of BattleBots, I mentored a San Diego team in First Robotics, Team Hammerheads, and Kearney Mesa here, okay? And the Cheesy Poofs were the team to beat, and Paul was a mentor on that team. Now, to give you guys a scope of maybe what you see Paul build here as Bite Force, you should have seen what the high school robots looked like. They water jetted the pathway in the aluminum frame that they made for every wire and the loop of zip tie to hold that wire.
Yep.
Okay. Now I know that the guys at first, they've experienced it. And I just want the folks out there to know that, yeah, Paul puts that kind of level of engineering into it, much like we've all had to be.
Well, so we have a team member, Brian Culver, who for a few years was an active mentor on the Poofs. So the year Tantrum won, Cheesy Poofs won World Championships as well.
Yeah.
That's like
over and over. Over and over. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never put them down. That's all I'm saying. Those guys were showing me, you know, just how unready I was. Being in first reminded me that I didn't know shit about engineering, because I would watch the robots being built by high school kids and they would just put me to shame. And it really made me realize I had to kind of, you know, be a little bit more detailed about, you know, trying to do custom things. And I think Paul shows that in his Bite Force robot. I think it's just very clean and very minimalistic. We all laughed. I think there's not one of us that thought, oh, it's an aluminum frame. Oh, that's no big deal. Yeah, if you can't get to it, though, you right. know?
Yeah, if I can't touch it, I can't damage it, yeah.
And, like, more directly, too, like, to answer the question, if Bite Force from season 3-4, right, came back and tried to fight, it wouldn't hold up, in my opinion. It wouldn't hold up because, as we talked about, the entire field has evolved. But Paul is not going to show up with correct. Season 5 Bite Force. So,
yes.
I actually think it would. I think it would be okay.
It'd be okay, but it's not going to
because it has the sweep. Fundamentals.
It has the fundamentals, but it's not going to sweep. And, yeah.
And half of Paul's success is just he is just a meticulous driver. And that's always going to be a factor in how well he does what he does. So
you can take away the word driver. He's meticulous everything.
Yes.
But it's like, driver. Yes. Match prep. Like there's a lot of the, oh, they got super lucky. I'm like, you notice the people who are prepared tend to get luckier more often because when it happens, they're ready to burn.
He gets lucky a lot, but if you get lucky all the time, it's not luck. Okay.
I think Jameson should come in here now, because now, you know, there could be this change of vertical spinners. We all know that we all focus on the people we lost to last. And, you know, right. That's kind of the first thing we do. We go back.
I don't want Ray to change his design.
Yeah. Well, he's not. Ray's not. Okay. Don't worry about him. He'd do something different. But I'm just trying to say, you know, it's funny because we've watched the whole cycle of sports go, and then, you know, now everybody's, you know, talks about all the vertical spinners. Before that, it was all the horizontal spinners. Huh. Never know. You know, the world finds a way, right, to innovate new ideas. And I just hope that that's the part that keeps going in BattleBots, because that's really the better way for the show to succeed, is just, you know, continued diversity of designs and, you know, keep trying to impress the other engineers that you show up to compete against, because those are your real audience, you know, usually.
Absolutely. And that leads really good into, I have a couple last questions, and that leads into about, you know, looking at last season. I've talked about this so much on the show because, I mean, for me, it was such a great season because there were so many, at least for me, surprises and, you know, seeing designs that haven't done well for a period of time suddenly, you know, work really well, you know, to see a robot like Huge be able to do what it did, to see Sawblaze finally break through and win the Giant Nut. I mean, just the level of innovation in the robots that have done well this past season gives me really a lot of hope for, you know, the future seasons, as far as seeing that continued innovation kind of pouring in. And I want to know what you all think. I mean, is that really the path forward? Because for me, I think that it is.
I liked everything you said, except for me remembering my fight with Jameson. I think I just pretty much drove at him, did a cartwheel, and the whole match was over with.
I remember my first fight with Jameson. It was great. Second fight, ow.
The thing is, if you spend any time in this sport, you're going to end up fighting the same people over and over again. That's just the nature of it, you know. So I'm quite sure that next time Jameson fights me, it's gonna be nasty.
Well, I'm not gonna do the welds this time. That was my that was my problem. I don't show anybody. Like, I don't think we sold any parts that year on eBay, because I was looking at him like, I'm embarrassed to let anyone have this.
That's funny.
We're in a super crunch time. I think we welded everything in one weekend. We didn't sleep at all.
I remember we have a fun time juxtapositioning the first time we faced Ray in season 3 and the second time. because the second time it was like, we won the giant nut Friday night. This is great. We're all excited. And then Greg's like, hey, so you face Tombstone at noon tomorrow.
Oh, man.
But it was like, we're beat to shit. Like, all right, but it's at least a break. You got a good shot at this. All right.
Yeah.
Blade break. Sweet.
Well, okay. And, you know, I broke off a hunk of that weapon, and it's as soon as that happens, it just shakes itself to death. So, you know, you won by being the brick.
Step one.
Well, so the first time the fist came off, and the second time the blade came off.
Correct. Yeah.
Good story.
So what's going to come off the third time?
It's stalemate. It's going to be a draw.
You know, oh yeah,
a bloody draw. So.
They'll both leave on fire that time.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like us even facing each other again gets lower and lower. One thing I've realized every year I show up, the first four qualifiers are against robots I've never fought before. Right? You guys all contest to that? Like your first qualifiers in the arena typically aren't robots we face. So if we go down the ladder and we look at all the fights that we have currently had, more than likely your new fights will be all these new guys that are fighting it out at where Alex is right now, the proving ground, right? Isn't this the best part?
Yeah, I mean, sure, because they want something new to show on TV. I mean, it's not like they're it's not like they're giving us an easy opponent. They just want something that hasn't been seen before, you know?
I will tell you, I think that was like the coolest thing. I remember when they asked me to get involved with that. First, I was like, you're crazy. I can't believe you're going to do a live show. This just can't work. I don't know how, but the more I thought about it, and they brought up the point that they had their arena there all year long and that they would be able to somehow make money and get new people in. I thought that was actually a pretty good idea, and it's kind of worked, right? I mean, I think so far out of maybe, you know, I think they did 60 shows and maybe 20 robots have so far came.
There are over 100 shows at this point.
Yeah, I know there's 100 shows, yeah. But it just did something that I didn't expect it was going to do. You know, it gave us some longevity, saying, look, you know, we got a building, we can make our own sustainability, new robots can come, and we can still have a live show once a year the way this is set up. And, you know, I think that might be the best thing overall. Keeps the people that are trying a new idea. I mean, think how cool it is. So you guys can show up with one set of charged batteries and a brand new robot that's as risky as hell. And by the time you leave there, if you have one good match, right, which is kind of what happened with Doom against Ray and
absolutely.
And the cat, right? Wasn't that a great story? I mean, the kid walked away. I bet he's right now picking up sponsors, getting that robot built.
I would hope so. Because
all he had to do is have one good fight, and it didn't cost him $30,000 and three different designs or three different robots. And a chance of getting in the show, you got to earn it. Now,
well, it also gives us the opportunity to try something. I would never take Mortician and Cat Kong to BattleBots for being on TV. I would never do that. But I'll do that to go to there to goof off and have a good time with it. You can try ideas that you would never actually put on the show. You can explore them and decide, yeah, this is fun, I'm having a good time with it, or no, it's not worth the effort.
And don't get me wrong, I would say there's a ton of robot competitions out there. I know all of you guys all do. I suck at that. I have zero time, but I admire everybody who just goes to all of the robot competitions and, you know, fosters their design and has, you know, their peers tell them it's a great idea. Because that's really what it's going to take to talk him into the craziness of competing in BattleBots with the giant one. It's a lot of work. So,
right. Yeah, and it gives you somewhere safe. I think that's the one thing that gets overlooked too.
Yes.
The fact that you can go somewhere and you have a box set up year round that you can actually spin up and hit things. And I mean, that's why we're here. We're testing out some new stuff, some new robots. And hoping that we can learn from them, iterate on them. And like, I think that's one of the commonalities between everybody on this podcast here is that like iteration on a design is how you win and how you end up in the top echelon. And so having this facility now be able to do that is great.
I think as you guys all sit here together, I have a different feel, I guess, because it's been so long for me. I'm very tired from it all, I will tell you. But I can't help but think what the future holds. You know, when it comes down to us looking where we started back in the early days to where it is now, you got to have a mindful eye at maybe what 10 years looks like from now. And someday, all the hard work, all of you guys will look back and you will be further reminded, not that you aren't now, just of like, what a great impact you made on the world. I mean, I expect to see a robot coliseum sometime in Vegas, without a doubt, with or without us, you know?
Absolutely. Cool. and I just want to add too, I mean, like what you bring up is a great point, because I mean, I think that everybody here, you know, at some point in your lives, you were probably, you know, especially for you, Jameson and Alex and Aaron, inspired by folks that came before you. And you're now part of that group inspiring other people to build. You know, I can speak as somebody who many times when I started this podcast and people would say, when are you going to build a robot? I said, that's not going to happen. And here I am building robots. So, you know, it just takes time. And eventually you get that inspiration. Now, let's get this right. I'm never building a heavyweight.
You say that now.
Right. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. Bullshit.
But it, you know, it's still, it, that inspiration carries through, and there's so many people out there that will watch this and continue to watch Combat Robotics and continue to be inspired. And I think that that's just a beautiful cyclical thing, you know, that can keep on going. So I do have one last question for Ray that I said I was going to ask earlier, and that is,
okay,
what is more satisfying, driving a Maserati up to 60 miles per hour or destroying a robot?
Only 60.
They're a different type of satisfying. You know, so for anybody that doesn't know, I just bought a Maserati 2 days ago. And you know, it was one of those things I just kind of always thought I wanted, came across the right deal. And I got to admit, asking me right now when I just got it, which is better, I'm gonna have a hard time, you know, saying anything against the beauty that's sitting in the driveway. It's a beautiful car. I have a real good time with it.
Is that because you can go out right now and drive it?
I can go out right now and, you know, go see if my Maserati does 185. You know, I can.
And most of the time you're done playing with it and then you leave it and then you come back and you play with it again and you didn't have to make a new one.
Exactly. It just starts and runs. I don't have to like rebuild it every single time I park the thing. So.
Maybe we should all build our robots as cars. Somebody get us funding for that. I would die to have a monster truck sized version of Lockjaw kicking VWs over a junkyard fence.
You know, I the only time I think of that is if I had a car that was like Bronco, would be great for when there's traffic. You just drive under and just get out of that car out of the way. You could just launch all the cars out. Okay, so I could see that. That would be fun.
And we get to drive it.
I'll take a huge car.
I'd take the Sawblaze commute to work. You just sit there and you just, and then
that sounds like the best PR plan we've ever came up with. Somebody pitch that to the network to give us each 50 grand to build.
50 grand.
Yeah.
It should be enough, right? Small ones, Scott.
Dude, you're gonna have to make it out of VWs. That's the only rule. All the parts have to be made out of a VW engine, so we limit the power. Yes.
Hey, for fans who are watching, if you think this is a solid idea, hit that like button, say something in the comments. All of that good stuff. But yeah, I want to thank all of you for joining in on this. I mean, I think it's so great to look back and then also kind of look forward, because I think that combat robotics is such a young sport, and like people don't realize this. Like it really, I think, has a lot of longevity with what I've seen from a lot of builders that are coming up and people that just have these fantastic ideas. So we'll see what happens moving forward, but you know, just everybody who's watching, please like, subscribe, share, all of that good stuff. Keep supporting Combat Robotics, because the more people who support it, the more we can grow it and, you know, make lots more cool robots and fight them. So we'll see everybody next time on the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much.